restless sleep. That's what she complained of, a restless sleep. A messenger came to me that afternoon with word from my wife. "Pilot," she said, "I've had a dream," she said. "I've had a dream concerning that righteous man. Have nothing to do with him." A restless sleep. That is what she complained of. Since that dream of hers, I've had nothing but a restless sleep. Even now, I know that I will lie down again tonight for another, yet another night of restless sleep. Thoughts of that righteous man consume me. Now, bear in mind, I did not nail that man to the cross. He was not crucified by my hand. I went to great lengths to make that clear, illustrating, in fact, so that all could see. I washed my hands of that man's blood, and that was just fine as far as that crowd was concerned. His blood be on us and on our children. They cried out. No, I did not nail that righteous man to the cross. They did. They are guilty of his blood. It was not even my trial, you know. Their counsel tried him and found him guilty. Guilty of what? Who can say? I suspect that the charge of capital treason was trumped up. It was a way of calling my attention to the issue, of swaying my judgment, of making this into a political case. I suspect when they claimed that he was guilty of stirring the people up, disturbing the peace, our great Roman peace, that was the closest they ever came to the truth. The truth is that they were the ones stirring up the people. They, the religious leaders. I saw them mingling with the commoners, inciting them to call for Barabbas, stirring them up until nothing but that man's blood could quell their anger. Indeed, I do know how that council operates. I've confronted them before. Shortly after I began my tenure here, I set up the traditional Roman standards around the city of Jerusalem. They were circles of gold fixed on wooden poles bearing the image of our emperor. I expected some resistance. To tell the truth, I welcomed it. I had heard about the rebellious nature of these people and thought it prudent to teach them a lesson. This is Roman territory, after all. It's only right that these folks, like many others all around the world, bend to the powers that be. But these people will not bend. For 6 days, they protested these standards. When I stood firm in my decision, their protests grew more intense. When I threatened them with violence, they argued more vigilantly. When I threatened their leaders with death, they did not flinch. I was the one who bent. I was the one who gave in. And even then, that was not enough for them. When I removed the standards from the city, I sought to compromise with them by setting up a few golden shields. Not standards, shields. And not everywhere in Jerusalem, just at my own personal residence. No images, no idols, as they call them. These simply had my name and the name of the Emperor Tiberius inscribed upon them. Still, they persisted. I was defiling their holy city, they claimed. They went right over my head, petitioning Rome. Word got to Caesar. Tiberius himself sent word that I should remove the shields. And he went on to rebuke me for causing an affront to these people and their religion. This from the one to whom I was giving honor. Since that incident, things have only gotten worse. The Roman government, at my request, began construction of an aqueduct for the city of Jerusalem. The water supply of this city has always been a problem. Even the histories and religious writings of these people show evidence. When their great King David, king of the Jews, first conquered this place, he gained access through the water supply. So, it stood to reason, at least as far as I was concerned, that these people would learn to appreciate us Romans if I offered them what we do best. The aqueduct was a masterpiece of modern engineering. Beautifully constructed, arches, stone, it carries a never-ending stream of water, 40 stadia to the city. I built it as a show of good faith, a gift from Rome to them. Oh, when the money for the project grew scarce momentarily, these things happen, I arranged to borrow some funds from their temple treasury. I assured them it would be returned. The demonstrations that they held as I entered Jerusalem was evidence of their wrath. Tens of thousands of them rioting in the streets. But this time I made sure they were the ones to bend, not I. I sent soldiers out into the rioting crowds. At my command, the soldiers threw off their cloaks, revealing their short swords. My response to the insubordination of these Jews was swift, stern, and bloody. They did not bend, so I broke them. So, when they brought that man, that righteous man, before my judgment seat, by heaven, I was not going to bend to their will. They brought him here, not for a trial. That had already taken place. Their council, the Sanhedrin, had already tried him, as they have the right to do. It is rare that I even hear these proceedings. But this was different. This was a capital case. And I have final veto power in all capital cases. They cannot put a man to death without my approval. And I relish that tiny bit of authority I have over them. They had no case against this man. I knew that soon enough. Oh, how I look forward to vetoing that sentence, to letting this man go free. They resisted. Of course they did. But when I sensed that this man's death was important to them, expedient to their purposes, it only served to make me want to fight them more. This time, they would bend. It was his silence that gave him away, that proved that this man was no threat to the emperor. I've tried traitors before, instigators and insurrectionists. They are anything but silent. It is difficult to silence them, in fact. They usually go on and on against Rome in favor of their cause. They're full of threats and bombast, but this man, he was no traitor. No, whatever they had against him, it was no threat to Rome. And I told them just that. I find no fault in him, I said. But these stubborn leaders, they would not yield. Even after I had the man flogged, publicly humiliated, and severely punished, they would not bend. Until finally they resorted to threats. You are no friend of Caesar, they said. Their coy and clawing way have reminded me of the whole standards fiasco. And their way of threatening to bring this case and my unwillingness to bend to their decision to Tiberius's ear. Tiberius is, from what I have heard, in no mood to hear of more problems. Word has it that he has become dour and withdrawn. He has moved to the island of Capri, and he does not wish to be disturbed. Meanwhile, men in Rome have been conducting treason trials in his stead. It would not take much for them to put me on trial. No, I did not condemn that righteous man. His trial was over. His fate was sealed before he had even been brought before me. He did not die by my hand. I have washed my hands of his blood. They killed him. They are the guilty ones, and that is the truth. Or is it? As I consider what I could have, what I should have done, I'm tormented by a restless sleep. The question that I asked of him now haunts me. What is truth? I did not kill that man. That is the truth. But this is true as well. I did not say no.